I wanted to talk about one thing while Alejandro's still here from our Guadalajara group, because he has to catch a plane back to Mexico. Which is sort of the history of my teaching career. I think about the time I finished my Geshe degree, people started asking me to teach them in New York. So that was about, I don't know, 93, something like that, 1993. And so we rented a little room in Hell's Kitchen. It was under the ramp to the Port Authority, which is the most polluted half a block in America, because thousands of buses come and go there every day. And it was like rainfall, black rainfall all day. It's kind of wonderful. And that place is called Hell's Kitchen. And it is. And it's a dangerous neighborhood. We didn't have any money. So we rented we went to IKEA and rented Chase car, brought back all the furniture in one Honda Accord, and set up a table and some, I think, six chairs. And Ani Pelma helped start it. And we just started classes. I think six people came. I think John Stilwell came. The first day he had a tape recorder. And he said, we should tape this. And I'm like, I don't know why. But he taped it. And then we started like that, you know. Then we grew out of that space and we moved to, I forget, a Japanese center on the in the village. And that could fit about 50 people. We grew out of that. And then we started in a Quaker church. That could fit like 100 people. And we started. So my idea was to teach the whole Geshe course to Westerners, especially lay people who weren't monks. And I had this vision that lay people could teach other lay people, and it didn't have to be monks. And they could have normal life, they could have a family, they could have a job, and they could teach in the evening, normal people, because it seemed a shame that only male monks in Tibet could hear these things, you know. So I worked for 7 years, and I translated 18 courses for foreigners, and I found out that if I didn't give homework, people wouldn't study. So you had to do your homework. You had to be on time or we locked the door. Michael Wick one day was outside smashing on the door yelling Dharma Hitler to me. And really. And so, you know, we went through the courses. We went through 18 courses. They were a tremendous amount of work. It's about 10,000 pages of translation. And I was still working in the diamond business at the time, so it was all really stressful. And so we did that. That was the first 7 years. Then I went into a 3-year retreat. And then came out and started. We started. Somebody else bought Diamond Mountain. I mean, signed for it. I had to pay for it. But we had to fundraise for it. So somebody signed some papers. They chose the place before I came out of retreat, because I had said maybe you could find a retreat place. So they went ahead and bought 1,000 acres. And gave me a bill for $1.5 million, and which we fundraised from small people. Small people gave $1 a day. Many hundreds of small people gave $1 a day. It was a 30-year mortgage, and we paid it off 25 years early, in the middle of the recession, you know. And just small people gave small donations, and we paid it off. Then we started in 2003. Teaching advanced Buddhism, Vajrayana Buddhism, and that has never been put into a course before. There's no such course in the monastery. There's two tantric colleges in the world, in Tibet, of the Dalai Lama's lineage. They're called Gyume and Gyudo. And my teacher was one of the heads of Gyume. So he taught me tantra for 20 years or something, and then I thought I would write a course for foreigners, for Westerners, about tantra. So we did that. That was over 10,000 pages of translation. So we went word for word through 10,000 pages of advanced Buddhism with 130 people graduated. 134, I think, people graduated. And I kept giving talks in other countries. Then when I got out, I thought, when we finished that, I thought I would like to try teaching not directly from scriptures. So for, I don't know, for 20 years I taught directly from Buddhist scriptures, like I'm doing for you now. Okay, but I thought, what if I just sort of summarize it for people in the modern world, right? And we called it DCI, Diamond Cutter Institute. And we started it with, I think, four or five people in Christine Walsh's kitchen 2.5 years ago. And then we just started traveling. People would invite us to different countries. These started as business success seminars or something like that. And then they got a little more into general life success and being a successful person and having successful relationships and, you know, being healthy and like that. And where was the first one? I don't remember. Was it in Detroit? Do you remember, Mercedes? Where was the first one? Oh, it was in Taiwan. It was in Taipei. So we tried in Taipei. 1,000 people showed up at the talk. We had 2 public talks, and then we had 3 days retreat. Then 150 people came to retreat. And it's been like that, you know. We just got back from, where were we? Guadalajara, Mexico City, Lima, Buenos Aires, and Cali, Colombia. And at 3 of the nights, 1,000 people came. It was like that, extraordinary. And people are really, really happy. And it seems to be really taking off. We're booked for, we have commitments for 5 or 6 years. We're booked ahead. We can't take new things. And so thousands and thousands of people are learning those things, right? So now we have people in, I don't know, the Diamond Cutter has been translated into 30 languages. And we have activities, I think, in 20 or 30 countries. I don't know how many it is. 156 cities. And these retreats, the 10-day teachings we're doing, like these 10 days in Phoenix, and then we've been alternating 10 days in Prescott, Arizona, which is cooler and has trees. And, you know, I went there when I was a Boy Scout, when I was a kid. We used to go up there. And it's more pleasant in the summer. So this class was supposed to be held in the spring. I'm sorry it got held in the summer. We're not supposed to be in Phoenix in the summer. We're supposed to be in Prescott. So we started having retreats up in Prescott, and between 100 and 150 people have been coming to those retreats. But we have a lot of feedback from our, because we're in so many countries now, people have been calling or writing and saying, we can't get into the United States because of the new, you know, policies of the government. There are many friends and students in other countries who can't get into the United States for the Prescott retreats. So we thought we would try something new in this winter. So it's not this August retreat, but there's a retreat scheduled for winter. What's the date?
March 30 to April 7th.
March 30 to April 7th, okay. We're supposed to have it in Prescott. It's snowing there at that time. Some people like that, some people don't. But we decided to try an experiment that we would do the winter retreat in Guadalajara, Mexico, so that more of our friends could come. Like last time, a lot of the Argentinian group signed up for Prescott, and they paid and they got their flights, and then they didn't get their visas. I think one person came out of 15 or something. And so they were asking us, people from China, people from Russia, people from Japan, they're asking us, could you move the retreat to outside the borders of the U.S.? So we'll do an experiment March 29th to
March
30th to April 6th, 2013. Okay. Oh, it's in the book. And these are the 2 Guadalajara mafia chieftains here. And they're doing fantastic work there. The last public talk there had 1,000 people. And it was very, very beautiful, very, very intense. And in that moment of that intensity, I thought, there's a saying in Buddhism that when good things go to a new level, the wrong things will also go to a new level to try to block it, you know. So we've had some heavy stuff the last few weeks, right? I feel it's partly a result of that, of how much good trouble we're stirring up with Diamond Cutter Institute in the world. I think 5,000 people came to the last tour. So we'll try, okay? It's a relatively short flight from the United States. We tend to think of Mexico as another country, but many of the cities in Mexico are closer than New York or closer than Chicago. It's cheaper to fly to Guadalajara than, say, to New York. We tend to think there's a line there and that we have to go to a foreign country. But in DCI and in this group in general, because we're in the Southwest United States, we're trying to embrace the Hispanic culture here. We're trying to... our center is in the middle of a Hispanic neighborhood. We're all learning Mexican songs or Cuban songs. And we're trying to ignore the border. We're trying to create a cultural entity which stretches from Prescott to Puerto Vallarta, something like that. We'd like to see it. Maybe we could call it Sonora, a new country, okay, called Sonora. And it stretches halfway into Mexico and halfway into the United States. And can we, as a spiritual group, put our work where our mouth is? Can we bring together two cultures which are a little bit in collision now? Especially in Arizona, there are new laws about stopping people in their cars, and members of our group have been stopped in cars near Diamond Mountain. It's a very active area for illegal immigration. We've had many... John Brady, who's the new retreat director, came home one night from some prayer, and there was a guy with a broken leg in his living room, a Mexican guy. A lot of people try a very dangerous route up the mountains there. And so we felt like we would like to do something to contribute to recognizing that we could be one people, and that we could just all do our activities together as one people. And maybe that would help the general situation in America and Mexico. So we've been working really hard in Guadalajara and Mexico City, and they've been working super hard. They translated the Diamond Cutter, a new translation. They translated karmic management. They translated the meditation posters. They have they're translating How Yoga Works, I think. And they're publishing all over the Spanish world. There are three great cultural groups in the world. Linguistically, okay? There's Chinese, which is 1.2 billion people speak Chinese, either in China or other, like Singapore. There are 1.1 Spanish speakers in the world, okay? It's about the same in the world. All together, there's two great cultural groups in the world. There are Chinese and Spanish. And then English is spoken by 500 million people as the native language, and by another 500 million as a second language. So there are three groups culturally that account for half the world's population. So we really want to concentrate on those three groups, you know. The English is covered because I came from America, and a lot of the group comes from North America. China, we're doing very well. We're covering very well. We have very good programs running in Beijing, Shanghai, Zhuhai, Guangzhou, Dalian, Shenzhen. It's going well. It's what do you call it? Secular. It's not religious. But it's Buddhist, you know, based on Buddhist principles, how to be successful, how, you know. And then Latin America. So in my mind, if you want to affect the world, my goal or my dream is to affect the culture of the world with a single idea, which is your life is coming from how you treat other people. You know, that what happens in your life, who you meet, what success you have, comes from how you serve others, right? And that's the basic message, right? And I would like to work hard as a group, DCI especially, to to get the world thinking that way. So, for example, if someone with that kind of thinking wanted a partner, they would go to Sephora, go to a club, go to a yoga class, or, you see what I mean? Or a nursing home, okay? And in this system, we go around the world. Part of the message is, if you want a personal relationship, because you want companionship, then you must plant those seeds by helping someone who's lonely. You must serve a person who is lonely. So, you know, due to our efforts for the past 2.5 years, there are thousands of men and women around the world frequenting nursing homes and waiting, you know. And it's cool. I think it's very, I'm very proud of it. And it's a culture or a way of looking at things that says your life is coming from how you treat other people. And if you want things, then be good to other people. Take care of other people, right? That's the whole thing. In America, there's this idea of democracy, right? Everyone has a vote. Everyone has an equal right. There are basic rules about civil rights, personal rights. These have all flowed out of the teachings of Moses and Jesus. The rule of law in Western countries has come out of Judaism and Christianity. You know, you don't have to be a Christian or a Jew to live in the United States. But the rules of the country subconsciously have been founded on the teachings of Moses and Jesus. You know, and they're good rules. They're nice. And they have spawned the idea of democracy. So, you know, when you drive your car and there's a real road to drive on and the police don't stop you and you have to pay them, when you're in a country which is not corrupt, right, mostly, it's the effect, it's the hidden effect of two great religious traditions, Judaism and Christianity. And you're not aware of it. You just live here. And you have a democracy and you don't know where it came from. Subconsciously, it came from those two traditions, religious traditions. I have this dream that we can inject a Buddhism code of or code of life so well that it becomes transparent, right? And nobody knows and nobody cares that it came from this book in the 15th century. You know what I mean? Just it becomes how people teach their children that if you want something, you should provide it to someone else first. And that becomes the world culture, just the way people do things. Then we can all retire. I'm looking forward to it, okay? We don't have to travel anymore. And nobody has to know who started it. And nobody has to know where it came from. It's just that people all over the world, in many countries, who want to be prosperous will take care of other countries' people. And people who want to have a relationship will seek out lonely people and serve them. You see? People who want to be strong, before they go to yoga, they will go to the hospital and care for sick people. And if somebody says, you know, I can't do a handstand, in my future reality, your teacher will say, you need to help somebody with appendicitis, you know, or something like that. Like, I want to see that become normal thinking in the globe, in the world. So I think that's a big step for us, is to move up that winter retreat out of the United States and to Guadalajara, just to recognize the fact that we are no longer... I used to tell people, I'm not a Tibetan Buddhist. I haven't been a Tibetan Buddhist for almost 20 years, okay? Since I graduated, 1995, okay? Then they'd say, what are you? I'd say, I'm an American Buddhist. And our Buddhism is different in the way that Tibetan Buddhism is different from Indian Buddhism or Chinese or Japanese or Mongolian. They're all different. Each country makes its own version of things. Nowadays, I feel uncomfortable saying I'm an American Buddhist. Because I don't spend even half my time in the United States anymore. It's all over the world now. It's many, many countries. So I feel like it's appropriate. I think it's a big move this year, or that the first big retreat will be in Mexico, just to kind of recognize that we've outgrown national borders. Okay, our thinking and our feeling and our service has outgrown national borders. We're not really paying much attention to national borders anymore. Okay, so I think it's exciting. I think you should try to make some plans to come. Okay, it will be the next installment of this text. And it'll be fun. We've done some medium-sized retreats there, maybe 100 people, 150 people, and it's been very, very pleasant. It's up in the mountains, and it's much more, how do you say, comfortable than Prescott, to tell you the truth. More comfortable, better food, and very sweet people, very, very nice people. You know, you haven't seen Mexico if you've only been to Tijuana or Nogales. You know, it's totally different inside. Very, very spiritual people, very deep thinking spiritually. And so I'm excited. So please think about coming, okay? All right, let's start the class. Then Alejandro's gonna have to leave before the end of class. Okay. Okay, so we left it at a visualization that you can do before you meditate. I'm going to teach you that visualization carefully. And I'm going to teach you a more difficult visualization carefully. Oh, by the way, we also have at the break a Japanese student who's here has offered to do a tea ceremony for us. And yeah. So we'll be doing that at the break. I get to drink the tea, you get to watch. Okay, and I enjoy that we are becoming global, and I like that. I really like that, and I like that we are embracing China also, our Chinese friends. And you know, I was scared the first time I went there, and now it's been I don't know 5 years, and there are thousands of students there now, and they are good people, nice people, deep people, and they have. They have emptiness in their blood. They get it right away. So, and they ask the toughest questions. But anyway, I'm just very proud of what we're doing worldwide. Okay. Tumbe Tukar Yeshe Semba Dorje Changdang. So, personally, this visualization is too complicated for me. I don't do it, okay? But I'm going to teach it because it's in the book. And if you want to try it, you can try it. Okay. So far we have a Buddha in the visualization who is in essence, outer form is Buddha, inner essence is your own personal teacher, whoever it is. Inside that Buddha's heart, okay, is Dorje Chang. Say Dorje Chang. Dorje Chang is Vajradhara, so Lord Buddha in his time on this planet gave three great cycles of teaching. Okay, one is called Hinayana or Theravadan, and this is mostly basic ideas of morality, which are foundational. We all support. We all follow them. The monk's vows all come from the Hinayana. The Abhidharma comes from Hinayana. Okay, he gave that whole cycle of teachings. Then later, he gave the Mahayana. Okay, Mahayana means basically advanced ideas about emptiness and helping the whole world. Okay, compassion, high ideas of compassion. Then he gave a third cycle of teachings called Vajrayana, Diamond Way, which are Tantra, meaning secret teachings. Tantra, the word Tantra means secret. My teacher used to say, somebody'd say, "What's Tantra?" He'd say, "Secret. It means secret." You know, and he was really funny. So these are secret teachings. And By the way, they're not secret because you do them in a dark room and you cut chicken heads off, okay? It's not secret like that. It means if your heart is on a high level, if you are serving other people constantly, you may have an experience of this room and of these people as being special. You know, in your ordinary life, you might walk into a restaurant and experience somebody as an angel. And that's supposed to be more frequent the more you practice. And it becomes a sort of positive. What is it where you think everybody's out to get you? Paranoia. This is the opposite of that. What? Pronoia? It's where you start to think everyone's trying to help you. You could say delusion, but it's not a delusion. It's just that your heart is purer. So you start to feel that people all around you are trying to help you. Okay? Even when they do something hard. You know, somebody hits you on the head or somebody criticizes you and you think, oh, they're trying to help me. You know, there's some kind of plot going on here to make me enlightened. And then that delusion gets bigger and bigger and embraces everybody. You know, you think everyone's out to get me enlightened. That's why people yell at me. That's why people praise me. That's why people kill me in the yoga class. Right, Anton? You know, they're all Buddhists and they're trying to get me enlightened. So that's Tantra, okay? When the Buddha taught Tantra, also Tantra is not some weird stuff, okay? It's not that. It's sweet. It's I'm going to serve other people at the homeless center until I start to see them as angels. And that lady said that, right? The lady who came to teach us how to serve the homeless, she was having those experiences automatically. Anyway, when Lord Buddha taught Tantra, he didn't do it in the form of a monk. He did it in the form of an angel called Vajradhara. Say Vajradhara. Okay. So that angel has long hair. That angel wears silk. That angel wears jewelry. That angel sings music. It's a different mode of one person, of Lord Buddha. So in this visualization, you're supposed to visualize that version of the Buddha in his heart. Inside the heart of the bigger Buddha is Vajradhara, okay? Who taught the secret teachings. But that's what it means secret, okay? It means you could shake somebody and say, everybody around you is a Buddha, and they'd say, yeah, yeah, what's for lunch? You know, they wouldn't see it. They wouldn't get it. Jesus said, let them hear who have ears to hear, right? And some people just won't get it. You know, you say, look, you're surrounded by beauty. You're surrounded by angels. Everyone is out to help you. And they just say, I don't like that guy. They don't hear it. You know what I mean? So anyway, it's a secret that keeps itself. Got it? Until you start practicing. Dorje Yeshe Sema Dorje Chang Dang. Those of you who care, there are special vocabulary for this visualization. There's a special set of words for this kind of visualization. The main being, the big teacher, the big Buddha, is called say Damtsik Semba, meaning a pledge being of pledge. And then the tantric teacher in his heart is called Yeshe Semba, a wisdom being. Okay? Yeshe Semba. They don't mention Damtsik Semba in this text, but it's understood for the big Buddha. And then the one in his heart is a Yeshe Semba, a wisdom being. Okay? Dei Tukar. There's another Buddha inside that Buddha's heart. Okay? Inside the Buddha in the heart is another Buddha, okay, in his heart, right? The Dalai Lama, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, I was there at the millennium. We were hoping to spend the millennium with him, and he taught in Bodh Gaya. Anybody was there? I don't remember. Yeah, he was teaching a practice called the Tigle Chuduk, the 16 bindus, or the 16 drops of the Kadampa system. That's what he was teaching on the millennium. And that's 16 levels down, 16 beings in the heart. You know, one inside this one, one inside this one, one inside this. It got pretty complicated. You're just doing three. Okay, it's the Buddha, and in his heart is a Vajradhara, and in his heart is a being called Tingenzin Senpa. Tingenzin Senpa means a meditation being, a being of meditation. That being is blue, okay? Then when I say blue, you think of some painting you saw of some Hindu deity and their body was painted dark blue. Don't think like that, okay? When they say this being is blue, it means they are fluorescent. Then they are shining in blue light. They are made of light. Don't think they are painted blue, okay? That's just all that they can do on a painting. Okay. Somebody should make some new images which are made of glass and shine with their own light. You see what I mean? Because that's what they are. They are made of light, like the sun, okay? Like that. They are giving off. They are radiating blue light. It's not that they're painted blue, okay? Numbote, Dirangatandela Yimbe, he says, in this case, we are flirting with Tantra. We are getting close to Tantra, okay? Yimbe, Sema Sumsek Seldabgu. Therefore, you should meditate, say Semba Sumtsek. Semba Sumtsek. Semba means holy being, like Changju Semba means Bodhisattva. Semba is the sattva in Bodhisattva, okay? It means a holy being. Sum means tree. Chek means stacked up like adobe bricks, okay? Stacked up. Three beings stacked up. I thought you would enjoy hearing I want to go off on a tangent, and we probably won't return to the text shortly. But there's a really nice discussion of this practice, which is a tantric practice, this visualization, in some of the tantras, okay? And since Pabongka Rinpoche was blabbing about it, I won't get in trouble if I blab about it. I thought you would like to hear a really nice explanation of this practice from another text. So this is a text... It's from the Bhairava practice. Bhairava practice. Okay. Okay. So here we go. De tukar dade la nebe jampe la yeshe samba shejube gyuten yute. When we say that there is a wisdom being sitting in the heart of another holy being, there's a reason why we use that wording, that unusual vocabulary, wisdom being, okay? He's going to tell you why he's called a wisdom being. Detong ye me ki ye she shimbe lungdang chepe hlai kun namba sharwe na. It's a principle of the Buddhist practice of yoga that certain things are happening inside of your body. Yoga in Buddhism is considered secret. Yoga asana is tantra, according to Buddhism. I didn't know that people were doing yoga in my monastery for 25 years, okay? Because it was secret. And then when you finish a geshe, you're allowed to start. You're allowed to start yoga after finishing a geshe, maybe 20 years, 25 years. Then you're allowed to start yoga, okay? Because it's considered inner body work. It's considered transforming the body into light. It's a high practice. It's considered a very high practice. So my teacher used to say about the popularity of yoga in the West, he was really, really excited about it. He said, all of those people who are attracted to yoga, they were high practitioners in their past life. Then they got hit by a truck or something. Okay. Then they ended up here in America or Mexico or wherever. But they saw the word yoga on the side of a building and they said, I would like to try. I would like to try. That's attractive to me. They don't really know why. According to my teacher and according to Buddhism, they were doing yoga before. And then they died. And that now in this life, they're attracted to yoga. They want to be a yoga teacher. Or all those people who are yoga teachers, they're really lucky. They are high practitioners from their past life. We believe that. My yoga teacher believed that. my monastic yoga teacher. So anyway, Detong Yan Meki Yeshe means wisdom which understands emptiness. Okay? The wisdom which understands emptiness. That was today we were talking about Thad in the class, right? The meditation class. So what's Thad's emptiness? He could be nice to you today, or he could be mean to you today. He's a white blank movie screen. Whether you see a nice guy, which I've always seen, by the way, or you see a mean guy, it's up to your own seats. He's a blank screen. He's just there. Then if you've been nice to other people, he's nice to you. And if you've been mean to other people, he's mean to you. That's emptiness, that understanding. That's what I want to get into world consciousness. That's the concept I want to spread in the world. That's all I want to do for the rest of, you know, couple of decades or whatever. Go to places like Guadalajara. Get people thinking like that. They made a movie. Their group made a movie. It is awesome. It is extraordinary. It's about seeds. You should see. It's called Semilla. I forget. Dilla.
Grandfather Seeds. Oh.
It's a fantastic film. Like, they just did it. You know, you should see it. We should play it next time. Okay. It has English subtitles, okay? And it's awesome, okay? That's the idea that I would like to see spread. If you want to be happy, if you want financial, what do you call it, security, if you want to be healthy, if you want a good relationship with a man or a woman, then serve other people. Serve lonely people. Serve sick people. Forget going out and buying lipsticks or... Don't go to Sephora and stand there for half an hour and try to decide which color is going to work. It doesn't work. If you've helped lonely people, any lipstick will work. If you haven't helped lonely people, none of it will work, right? I want to spread this idea. Anyway, that's an appreciation of emptiness. In Buddhism, the higher teachings of Buddhism say you will understand that more easily if you are in a state of... What do you call it? If you are in an elevated state, you will get those ideas more easily. How do you get into an elevated state? Serve other people, or do yoga, or meditate, especially with a partner, okay? In the higher teachings, Lord Buddha himself got enlightened. On the night of his enlightenment, he meditated all night with a partner, with his spiritual partner, whose name is Tilottama, okay? So it's a practice, and it's always been a practice since Lord Buddha. He invented it, okay? So he said, if you match the male and female energy, and then you put your mind on these ideas, you will grasp them faster. And he encouraged that, okay? So why am I mentioning all this? Because in this text it says... For you to have these high ideas, your mind must be in an elevated state. Okay? By service of the poor, or by meditation, or by the blessing of your teacher, or by the blessing of your partner, your mind must be in an elevated state. Okay? That state of mind must ride upon prana. All thought, all movement of thought occurs in a human being as the prana moves. As prana moves, like a horse, great ideas ride upon its back. Okay? Prana flows through the body, and then great ideas have a foundation to move through your mind. All understanding of life is riding upon prana in your body. This is tantra. This is the higher teachings. Okay? Therefore, you must do yoga. Because you must increase the flow of prana in the body, and your mind will change. Because that's where mind and body meet. Thoughts are carried upon prana. Prana is stimulated by yoga. Then they say chinantabla tsorbet, right? It means you can get at the prana by working with the mind, by meditating, or you can get at the mind by working on the prana through yoga. And which is better? That's a it's an old trick question in the monastery. They'll say, which is better, yoga or meditation? And a good student will say, don't give me dumb questions. Don't give me dumb choices. It's both. We should do both. We should do yoga, and we should meditate, and we should serve the poor and the hungry, and okay, like that. Because that makes the prana flow. That makes your ideas flow. This is cool. The prana, the inner wind, on which the highest realizations ride, appears as a wisdom being. That's why they call it a wisdom being. The guy inside the guy's heart, the tantric teacher inside the guy's heart, is a wisdom being. Why? If you could take a bottle and bottle the prana on which the highest understandings are riding, right? And stuck it in a bottle, and you looked in, it would be like him. You would see him, okay? It always manifests as him or her, as that being, okay? It's very cool. If your asanas were really good, and the prana is flowing, and you could see that prana, it would look like this being inside your heart. Okay? That's why we call him a wisdom being. Okay? Got it? That's a long answer. I like it. Okay? Sharawena, deta jupa yimbichir. That's why we call them wisdom being. They took our nyinden la nebe huye la tingin semba she jupa gitsen yute. In the heart of the wisdom being, we said there's another being called, what kind of being? A meditation being. Yeah, he's blue. He or she is blue. That being never takes the bodily form of a person. They take the bodily form of a letter. Okay? It could be V or it could be something. Okay? In this case, the letter happens to be HUM. Like OM AH HUM. Okay? OM MANI PADME HUM. It's an important syllable. HUM. Okay? By the way, it's not hum or hum. It ends with an NG. Say hum. Hum. Okay. Everybody mispronounces that. Then it doesn't work. Okay. They took our nyinden la nepa. In the heart of the wisdom being is a disc, the sun. And on top of that is another disc, which is the moon. Okay? Sorry. Cancel that. Only a sun. Why do we call that? Then I'll stop. Okay, I'll give you a break. Hang in there. We're almost done. I mean, then you can go home and do your emails and stuff. He says, why do we call that Hung letter a meditation being? Why do we give it that name? Why do they call it that? He says, De la migne gombe lungtam je ningi mi shikpe tigle. Have you ever heard of mi shikpe tigle? When? This morning. Okay? The indestructible drop in the heart. Okay? Here it is in the text. Here it came in the text. Okay? De la migne gombe. If you meditate on high spiritual ideas, lung tam che, all of the prana in your body, ninge mishipe tigle la tim, will dissolve into the indestructible drop inside your heart. We talked about it this morning. Here it comes by pure coincidence. Okay? That's the storehouse of karma, right? All your seeds stay there. But at some point, if your yoga asana is really good, then the prana will all go, it kind of sucks into the heart chakra and sucks into that tiny little spot called the indestructible drop. Okay? What happens then? I don't know. Let me see. Ishipe tigle la tembe usel la sope tingensin kiperchen ke. Then you get what's called usel. Say usel. Usel means what? Clear light. Clear light. Okay? It's a synonym in the secret teachings for emptiness, okay? Is it light? No. Is it clear? No. Okay? It's not physical. It's just a metaphor. It's like diamond, okay? Diamond is close to usa, okay? clear light? Is it made of light? No. Is it clear? No. Uzzel sort of describes, that's a long story, let's leave that. Long story is when you see emptiness directly, you have an experience of prana flowing out of your heart after that. After you come out of that experience, you experience a flow of prana directly out of your heart, which is directly connected to loving every single living being. Okay? It's the peak experience of prana in your body. If you do your yoga well, it triggers a unique experience in your heart where you have a love for every single living creature, and at the same time you see all their faces directly as if they were sitting in front of you. Okay? Not talking 200 million people, not talking 6 billion people, talking every living creature on this planet, from amoebas to whales to giraffes to humans, and not talking this planet only, talking endless planets. Okay? And in that moment, you can see the faces of each of them directly at the same time. And you love them. You have an intense love for them. Okay? And you know you will serve them. Okay? You asked, okay? That's real clear light. Okay. All right. Anyway, that's a prana thing that is brought on by good yoga practice. Okay? Which is cool. It's cool that we have so many good yoga teachers who help us. That's why we call that person a meditation being, okay? Because they are, that letter, hum, is a reflection of the clear light in the deep state of meditation, in the area of the heart. Okay, got it? We're not done, okay? But I think you need a break. Now he's going to talk about how to do the three levels in the text, okay? This is all a side thing, okay? I like to do this kind of thing. Again, it's only possible because the Tibetan ladies have been typing the scriptures for 25 years with your donations and with my... That's where all my business money went, okay? I'm a... What do you call it? Broke now. But we got 8 million pages done. Okay? So, and then you can just say, where do I have a good explanation of the three beings? And it will take you through 8 million pages in less than 10 seconds. And then I can give you this talk because they are typing. They are still typing, okay? They are, they will be going another 150 years at this rate, okay? Project. Mark Cipelli is working hard on that. Venerable Phil, Ningbo, Jigme, Lama Ora, they're all working on this project. So you should give them a hand. Yay! Yeah, yeah. Am I supposed to announce anything? No, we're supposed to do tea ceremony. Is it? Is that okay? How long does it take, if I may say? Okay. We have about half an hour left. I'd like to thank Kayo again for a beautiful ceremony. Yeah, yeah. I think it's a good example of how we should put an offering on the altar. And you don't think you have something else to do. You see what I mean? I think the essence of tea ceremony is you are just to stay your mind there, keep your mind there. You don't think I have to send an email this afternoon, or you just relax and you surrender to the ceremony, you know? And I think when we offer things on the altar, it's the same. Or I like to... I cooked for my lama for, I don't know, 8 years I was his only cook. And... to cook with some kind of mindfulness, right? To serve your teacher a meal or something. It's a great practice. It's a great meditation. Yeah, okay. I'm going to finish the Sumtek, Semba Sumtek, right? The three being practice. Okay, we'll finish that. First, I wanted to acknowledge the people who finished this course or got most of it done. So we kind of decided to graduate you. I still have one homework to write for today's class, but we'll send that to you online. But the people here came to the classes and finished the homeworks that they got, and we'd like to recognize them. Some of these are from the last class, okay? For me, the certificate means, I know that you're not, you know, I don't think you're going to go back to Mexico City and put it on your wall. But for me, the certificate means I trust you to teach this thing to other people. Okay, that's the main thing. At the beginning, we said that in this tradition, when you listen to a teaching, it's a grave responsibility. You know, you never come to a teaching in the monastery lightly. You, by coming, you are agreeing to pass it on. And this instruction that you're getting here has been passed on for 2,500 years, right? It's about 82 generations, okay? And you have, now it has come to you. And I always ask people, are you going to be the schmuck to break it after 2,500 years? Are you going to be the person who doesn't pass it on? You know, so those of you who are here, I don't have time to teach this again. I have other things to do. Countless things to do. So it's a unique opportunity to learn, I think, the greatest spiritual book on this planet for 10 years. And I'm very proud of the people who finished. And if you didn't finish and your name's not called out, then you should finish, okay? I'm just going to name the names, then I'll give the certificates back to Nicole. And I'd like to thank her for taking so much work to get it. Yeah. She's worked really hard to get the teaching groups at Paradise Cafe and make sure everyone did their homework and then to grade the homeworks like that. I'd also like to thank all of the ACI Phoenix board who are here today. They work all year to prepare these programs. They don't get paid. They just work hard. And I'd like to recognize them and thank them. So, Venerable Jigme, right? Will you stand up? Jeff Alexander, President. Yeah. Christine Walsh. Rebecca Vinicor, where are you? Scott Vesic. Yeah. We also get a lot of help from Venerable Losanduma, who's Ningbo's sister, who does most of our bookkeeping. Who else did I forget? Yeah, Nicole has been doing, she's on the board, and she has been doing all of the emails, all of the course communications, and all of the posters, which were very beautiful, and I'd like to thank Nicole. Yeah. I think also Tim Lohenhout did the playbill. I'd like to thank him for that. Yeah. Ori works on the website. Ori, exactly. Yeah. And first, I'd like to thank my two attendants, my two assistants, who travel with me tirelessly. They don't get paid. They work they work terrible hours. They have terrible pressure on them. They're very kind to me. And that's Venerable Ningbo and his partner, Mercedes. And lastly, I'd like to thank all the musicians. Also, yeah. We're also fortunate this time we have with us the two people who keep the knowledge base going. They have, I think, 7,000 teachings are there for free from the last 30 years. They're just free online, and it takes a lot of work to do it. We're lucky. Jamie Plant normally is in Thailand, living in Thailand, and teaching a lot in Taiwan. And then Lama Ora. So I'd like to recognize their work. Jamie, is that? And I'm sorry if I forgot anybody, but I'd also especially like to thank everyone who came from other countries and all the work you're doing, especially our German friends from Hamburg. Yeah. Oh, that's enough. We'll have to go all day if we do this. Okay, people who finished, I'll give them back to Nicole, and you can get them from her afterwards. Vicky Seil. Emmanuel Bissario, Sierra Schaefer, Dennis Moore, Mark Trapetti, Nicholas Walkley, Amy Lancaster, Venerable Phil Baker, Ursula Beckmeyer, Susie Newman, Marjorie Meyer, Kayo Akawa, and Francie Garavito. I'd like to thank you. Susie Newman is in charge of there's a branch of Amazon called Audible, and she talked them into recording the Diamond Cutter and Karmic Management on audiobook, and they're very sweet, and so she's in charge of that project, and she said, just be aware that they're available on Amazon, and you drive in your car and Geshe Michael is reading the Diamond Cutter or the Karmic Management. It was a really awesome thing. It was in Newark, New Jersey. They put you in a room which is on springs, and then there's a guy staring in your face in a window, and you're supposed to read your book for like 6 hours straight, you know? And you say, could you please... And then he pushes a button and it goes, eh! And then you're supposed to say, could you... We have a very active group working in the prisons in southern Arizona. I made it sound scary the other day, but it's not really scary. It's amazingly sweet. They are the best meditators in the world because they're locked up all the time. And they do their homeworks very well. They do 10 pages for a one-page homework because they don't have anything else to do. And they're very sweet. Very, very, very dedicated guys. Anyone can come. You have to take a small training. And it's the first time you go through all the, what do you call, steel gates and stuff, you feel a little nervous. Like, are they going to let me out? And then when you do your first training and you come out and you walk out into the parking lot, you feel happy for 3 days. You feel proud of yourself for 3 days, you know. You're like, I finally did something that's black and white good. You know what I mean? And you feel very happy about yourself. And they so appreciate it. So ladies or men, it doesn't matter. It's very safe. They're very careful how they conduct it. And the guys, I'm not supposed to say this, but probably 90% of them did something stupid when they were 18 years old. And they got locked up for 15 years, you know, and they're there. And they're great students. So talk to Jeff or talk to Nick if you're interested. And we'd love to have you. It's a lot of fun. Yeah? Okay, let's finish this Semba Sumtsang thing. Semba Sumtsang Sukhyepani. I'm still in the other book, okay? Secret book. Semba Sumtsang Sukhyepani. How do you do this practice? Jangshi Danchu Tunsu Yang Yute. So the three beings correspond to something in your normal life. Okay? Who are the three beings? The big Buddha that you're visualizing, the tantric teacher in his heart or her heart, and then the concentration being or the meditation being, which is a letter inside of the smaller Buddha. Okay? What do they represent in your normal life? The pledge being, which is the big Buddha, okay, corresponds to your gross physical body, okay, flesh and blood body, okay. Yeshe sembani nyugme lu lung sem ngo yeme du nebi yagya tu kyepe lung dan chetun. The wisdom being, which is the little tantric teacher inside of the other Buddhist body, right? That being represents your inner body, especially your prana, okay? It represents your prana. Which is kind of indivisible from your thoughts, because your thoughts travel on your prana. That's why we really push people to do yoga during these programs. If you do yoga in the morning, and then you get a difficult teaching in the evening, you will understand it better. Okay? You'll also be in a better mood. So we push you to do yoga. I know it was a kind of a grueling schedule, but I think it's worth it. We had a couple of people last night were telling me it's a little too much for people, but I don't think so. Twice a year? Come on. Four times a year? This is the schedule in the monastery for 25 years. And you don't stop. And you can do it for 10 days. I mean, I think it's okay. Anyway, that's the being in the middle, is your prana, represents your prana. Tingenzin semba ni nyume lung sem ngo yeme du nepe yagya tu kyepe sem dang chut tumba. The hung letter in the middle, the meditation being, represents, if the middle Buddha represents your prana, then the inner letter represents your mind in the indivisible combination of the mind and the prana moving through your body. Okay? When you're doing yoga and the prana flows, and then after you come out and you feel more clear for 4, 5, 6 hours, it represents that clarity of mind. Okay? That letter in the middle. So I don't want you to just visualize something and not know what it means. Okay? Chetumba yimbe echer. Semba sumse sukhepani lamki negap dan chetumba yang yinte. You can also draw correspondences between these three beings and your practice of Buddhism, your Buddhist path, the path, okay? Damtik semba ni dakma daki gyume kunyi pumbo rapa da shugne rakpe tuku zimba dan chetun. As you become, as you practice yoga more, as you study more, as you meditate more, the mortal body transforms into a body of light, okay? And the grossest form of an enlightened being's body is called tuku, say tuku. So tuku means nirmanakaya in Sanskrit, it means the body that an enlightened being sends to earth to talk to people. Okay, that's called tuku, nirmanakaya. Okay, so Buddha doesn't live here, but Buddha will send a body here to show to people. Okay, that's called tuku. So nowadays in a monastery, high lamas are called tukus, And you've heard the word tuku, or it's tuku, I say. Turn your tongue back, tuku. You talk like that. If you want to talk like that, you only have to turn your tongue back. Okay? Turn the tongue back and then say tuku. Okay, that's a tuku. Okay, so like the Dalai Lama is considered a tuku because he's a reincarnation. Okay, so anyway, that's tuku. The outer Buddha, the big Buddha, represents the tuku, the body that they send to earth. Okay. Yeshe sambani de tuke gimi kunyi don chutun. How should we say that? Sambani de tuke gimi kunyi chutun. Then there's a thing called an illusory body, the inner body of an enlightened being, okay? The pranic body of an enlightened being corresponds to the second Buddha, the one on inside the heart. Tingyenzen Sampa ni de tuke gyume kunyi ki tuk gyu ki de tong yame ki yeshe dan chitun ba yin becher. Then the Hung letter represents the wisdom of indivisible bliss and voidness inside the third Buddha. Okay? Got it? That's the path. On the level of the path, the tiniest one represents wisdom. The second one represents your inner body after you get enlightened. And the outer one represents the body you show on earth. Okay? All right. Last part. Semba sumse su kepa ni derbu nekap dan chitum bayende. You can draw a final correspondence between the three beings and how you will be at the end. Okay, when you get enlightened. That's one of the coolest things about Buddhism. You know, when you're talking about it with new people, you get to become God. Okay, the point of Buddhism is that you become Jesus. There's not one Jesus. Everybody has a Jesus seed inside of them. And if you practice well, you become an enlightened being, and then you become the Spider-Man on this world. Okay, you become the superhero on this world. I think it's beautiful. Okay, everyone, according to Buddhism, has a seed within him to become an enlightened being. Equally, we all have, even dogs and cats and birds, they all have this seed. And it's inevitable that you will become a Buddha. It cannot fail. You will become a Buddha. Every living creature will become a Buddha. It's just a matter of time. Some people will get there first, some people get there later. But we'll all become a Buddha. And I like that. I like that you get to be the Buddha. You get to have your own planet and take care of that planet, okay? Sometimes it's a hassle. But like that. It's very beautiful that each person, each living creature, your rabbit at home has a Buddha nature, and they will become a Buddha inevitably, cannot be stopped. Okay, it's very, I like it. Okay, anyway, here's the correspondences after you reach that. Okay, here we go. Debunga the chitumba yang yinte rimba shin tuku lonku chuku sumda namba tunching. So the outer Buddha, the big one, represents the body you will show on this planet. The Buddha inside that Buddha's heart represents, say, longku. Longku. Longku means the body you have in your own paradise. Okay? So when you get enlightened, you will have a physical body made of light which lives within its own paradise. You probably need a GPS to know where it is, right? Right? Say no. Okay, no. Where is Buddha Paradise? You know, you always think I have to go in an Apollo spaceship. You know, probably I'd have to modify an Apollo spaceship to get to my Buddha Paradise. Where you are now will transform. Okay? There's no separate Buddha Paradise. If you're sitting in my car, my previous car, 1980 Volvo, with no air conditioning, and works half the time, if you're sitting in that car and you get enlightened, where's your Buddha Paradise? It's in the Volvo. Okay, got it? There's no other place, okay? There are many realities going on in the same location. physics is just getting to that. We gave a talk at Princeton recently. It was called A Better History of Time. And I invited Stephen Hawking's publisher was there. And I said, here's a more comprehensive explanation of physical reality that still agrees with Stephen Hawking's mostly. And we had a wonderful time talking about that, but they're just getting to the concept of multiple realities in the room. Okay. So that's the idea. Longku, chukku sum. Chukku means your mental state when you get enlightened. Is represented by which of the three do you guess? The inside one, the innermost one, the hung letter, okay? Chukku sum da number da tunshing. Deta gomba la tene. If you keep practicing this threefold Buddha, kusumgi gopang lundu gyurpe nipa kyaprachen jopa yimbe echer. It plants a uniquely powerful seed in your mind to achieve those three bodies. If you do this visualization with three Buddhas, one inside the other, right? Like those Russian eggs, right? Fabergé Russian eggs. Then you can reach that, okay? It's just practicing it in your visualization will make it happen, okay? It's very beautiful, all right? So we'll come back to this text and then we'll stop. We have about 5 minutes. There's more on that subject. I don't want to overwhelm you, okay? I could go into the Sanskrit for all that. And there's a unique explanation of it. But let's save it for some other day, okay? We'll come back to the text. Okay, this is my final thing and it's important, okay? It's maybe the sweetest thing in this whole 10 days. Ona lamrim tumbe lama mambo yunakang selndep nyamna rangila pencheve lama de tsawar che gu. So this is the last big point. If you have many teachers, who should you visualize? Right? Who is your heart teacher? All right. So like in the monastery, we have many teachers. I have 12. Over the 25 years, I had 12 major teachers. 12 teachers spent years with me, teaching me, right? Those are, in the monastery, they're called Pecha Gergen. Say Pecha? Gergen. Pecha Gergen means your scripture teachers. They're like your college professors, okay? Like you have a close relationship, but it's not like Lama, you know? They're your... And each one teaches you a different subject. Oh, this is my logic teacher. This is my emptiness teacher. This is my compassion teacher. And they teach you from these books, you know. So you have a lot of Pecha Gergens. Then you have Kangten Gergens. Say Kangten. Gergen. They're your babysitter, okay? They're your house mom. Geshe Lothar is one of the best in the monastery. He was my house mom. Because a lot of people get to the monastery at age 7. You're allowed to enter at age 7. Luckily, there's a custom that you're not allowed to become an ordained monk until 21. We're not allowed to ordain a monk. You're allowed to ordain a novice monk, but you're not allowed to take full ordination until you're old enough to know what you're doing, and until you're old enough to decide to quit. And, you know, so they ask you, that you enter at 7 or you enter at 12, and then you feel lonely. Right? That your parents come and drop you off, and that's it. Maybe you get to see them a couple times a year or something. And then the first few days are really traumatic, right? Your mom just dumped you in the monastery, you know? And to soften that, they turn you over to a Kanten Gergen. That means your house mom. And they are the sweetest, you know? They like to cook. They're usually chubby. They make your bed for you. They make your robes for you. It takes them about a week to teach you how to fold, how to put on these robes without them falling down unexpectedly. They're very complicated to put on. So they just babysit you, you know, like that. It's very sweet custom. It's a very pure and sweet custom. Nobody gets paid. Nobody in the monastery gets paid, okay? And so they have to scrounge for your robes, and they have to scrounge for your food, you know. Your teacher, once you are accepted by a teacher, the teacher pays your expenses. You don't pay. They pay for you. If I take you as a student, I have to arrange your food, place to stay, and your robes, and things like that, your education. It becomes my responsibility. Okay. Then there's a, what do you call, symbiotic relationship. As the teacher gets older and the students grow into maturity, as they become geshes at age 40 or something, 35, then they start taking care of the teacher. Because the teacher by that time is old, is elderly. So there's this sweet synergy that goes on in the monastery. So you have your Pecha Gergen, and you have your Kansen Gergen. Then you have other, like your Vinaya master, say Ne Lama. Ne Lama means your mentor, your personal mentor. And you are assigned one in the monastery. So that's called your mentor. They're like an Alcoholics Anonymous sponsor. If you have a problem, they take care. Okay, so like if you feel depressed, or I don't know, you're sick or something, or you have they watch over. They are your, what do you call it, personal sponsor in the monastery, and they take care of you. And that custom is 2,500 years old. You are required to have a Ne Lama. Okay, we started that custom at Diamond Mountain. Each person had a Ne Lama, meaning someone they can go to when they have a problem. Like if they feel sad, or they feel confused, or they need some support. Everybody was supposed to have a Ne Lama at Diamond Mountain. Then 35 Ne Lamas went into a three-year retreat, and the whole system quite collapsed. So I'd like to repeat my request to Rebecca that regular students be encouraged to find a Ne Lama. That means somebody you trust in this group that you can go to for help. If you feel sad, or you feel like you're not sure about what you should do, or anything, they kind of are your AA sponsor. Okay, so I'd like to encourage you to talk to Rebecca. I like it that she has a list of who's the Ne Lama for everybody. Then if someone's having a problem, and I can go to the Ne Lama and say, you know, what's their history? Have they been depressed for a while? You know, what's been done about it? What else do we need to do? Okay, like that. Or it's just a backup. It's a spiritual backup, okay? Your Ne Lama is not necessarily your heart Lama, which is called Tsawe Lama. Say Tsawe Lama. Tsawe Lama. So Tsawe means root. And this is your personal spiritual teacher, okay? Tsawe Lama. He kind of defines them here. You ready? I brought this up because of the question that's raised in the text here. The text says, which of my lamas should I visualize? My Pecha Gergen, my Kansen Gergen, my Ne Lama, or my Tsa, who should I visualize? Which one? Because any monk or student who's regular, they have like 10 or 15 teachers, right? And those teachers sometimes contradict each other, which drives you crazy. Your head splits open and stuff starts to leak out. You know, like one teacher says, you go to one teacher in the monastery and they say, you should never do this, you know? And then you go to the other teacher and they say, you must do this. You know, and then you go like crazy. You feel like your head's going to explode. Two of your dearest teachers are telling you to do opposite things. Then in our tradition, the student is required to decide which is correct by examining which is more helpful for other beings. You see what I mean? This Lama told me I should do yoga. This other Lama told me I should never do yoga. This Lama ordered me to have a spiritual partner. This other Lama told me I can't have a spiritual partner. So what am I supposed to do, you know? And then the viewpoint in the monastery, or the viewpoint in Buddhism, is that you're supposed to think they are in collaboration. Whether they are or not, I don't know. Mine always were. You're supposed to think they are in collaboration. They planned to mess with your mind last week. They made this grand plan to mess with your mind. Then you're supposed to... Jetsu Kapa, the founder of our lineage, said, then you're supposed to think it over, what would be the kindest and most compassionate course of action for other people. Okay? Which instruction should you follow depends on which one would make you a better person and a kinder person. And it's the student's responsibility to decide. In the end, you have to decide a course of action based on what you've learned. Okay? So a lama will typically teach you for years, and then they'll put you in a tough position of having to decide what's the best course of action. It's a test. It's a very typical scenario. They teach you. It's called the rob the bank teaching. Okay, that's the last thing today. So then you go to your class, you go to your Perfection of Wisdom class at Geshe Thupten Rinchen's house at 2 p.m. in Gombo Kamsen, and you walk in, you know, and he says, okay, everybody sit down, I got something special today. And you all sit down. You sit on the floor, by the way, and the teacher teaches on their bed. And he says, today I have a special teaching. I want all of my students to go out and rob a bank. You know, this is called the rob the bank teaching. And then there's a historical story. The teacher told the students to rob the bank. Okay. Then there were three students of that teacher. Two of them went and robbed the bank because you're supposed to do what your teacher says, right? Then the third one said, but the scripture says if your teacher asks you to do something wrong, you should refuse because it's a test. Okay. Then so the third student said, I love you, you're my teacher, I believe in you, but I cannot do what you asked. It's immoral. It would be harming someone. And I think you don't want me to do it. You know? Then, of course, that student got an award, and they probably got an extra cup of butter tea or something. Okay? Like that. So, what this text is saying at this line is that, of course, you will have different teachers in your life. Sometimes the instructions you get from those teachers, even in yoga class, right? I go to one class and they say, your hands are too narrow. And then I widen them up. And then I go to the next class and the teacher says, you're going to screw up your shoulder. Make them closer together. You know, according to our tradition, in the end, you must make your own decisions. The teacher's job is to make you independent decision maker. The teacher's job is to teach you many, many years and give you the information that you need. In the end, it becomes your responsibility to decide what is a good thing to do and what is not a good thing to do. Okay? That's the purpose of the training. Right? And it should be a moral decision. It should be based on, will this hurt other people or not? Shall I do this thing or not? Is it a good thing to do? Is it a clean and pure thing to do? Okay? So, out of your lamas, one will rise, right? One will become closest to you. One will become your heart lama. Tsawe lama means heart lama. He says, how do you define heart lama? Pen chewe lama. Rangyu, say rangyula. They will stop, okay? Rangyula. Pen chewe lama. Which lama do you have who has most taught you kindness? And made you a good person, right? And taught you to serve other people, taught you to be kind to other people. The lama who taught you that the most is your heart lama. Okay? That's all. Okay? That's all. The one who taught you kindness and to help other people, to be kind to other people, serve other people, be gentle to other people. That's your heart lama. And that's the one you should visualize. Okay? That's a good place to stop, huh? That's a nice place to stop. Okay. All right, then. I'll see you in August. And we will do the other half of this subject. We're halfway through this subject, okay? Which is what George should do. The six practices that you should do before you meditate, okay? The six practices that you should do before you meditate. So that's the final class. There's a tradition in Tibet, okay? When I got to Dharamsala in 1973 or something like that, I walked into my first class. I got off the bus, this dirty Indian bus. I walked into my first class. All these people were bowing, all these Westerners were bowing down to Geshe Dargye. I freaked out. I said, oh my God, now finally I saw people breaking that commandment. You shall not worship, what is it, bow down to, you know. I was always wondering, all through church school, I never saw anybody break this one. You know, lying, I saw lots of people break that one. And I was like, ew, they're all bowing down to... And I felt uncomfortable. And I refused to do it for like a year, you know. Then they taught, he'll teach about it. He'll teach about how you do it. In Japan, it's a very beautiful custom, right? People still... And there's degrees, you know. Like, I've seen in the airport, it'll go... You know, and it's a beautiful custom. It's a very beautiful custom. So it's not some cult thing, and it's not some weird thing. It is the way in our lineage that people show respect for a teacher. So if you see other people doing it, don't feel like you have to do it, okay? It's not American. It's Tibetan. If you want to do it and it's fun for you, you're welcome to do it. And I don't care if people think it's weird. It's proper. And it's a healthy thing. And that's okay. But if it feels weird to you, you don't have to do it. Okay? If you see people doing it, you can just sit on the chair and say, oh, that's nice. Okay? You don't have to do it. Then he will teach us how to do it. It'll be in the book. Okay? Why am I bringing this up? In the last class of a series, you're not allowed to bow down to the teacher. Okay? You're not allowed to bow to the teacher. Why? It means you have unfinished business together. Okay? And that means you must meet again. Right? So it's my honor to see you all. I love you all. It makes me really happy to teach this text. It makes me really happy that somebody wants to learn it. You know? I can't enjoy teaching if I don't have anyone come. So for me, I'm very grateful that you come. And I'm grateful that you have courage to try to follow this path, even when there are obstacles. And I'm grateful for the chance to teach you. Because for me, it's a pleasure even to read this book. And of course, you work a lot harder, right, Anton, when you have to teach a class, right? You would never work so hard for yourself. But if you're going to sit up in front of other people, you work a lot harder, right? So, last thing, please teach it, okay? Please pass it on to others, all right? You don't have to learn the Tibetan and the Sanskrit and the Chinese and all that. But you should get the main ideas, and you should pass it on to other people. And make a class out of it, and do a collaboration. Maybe someone from Tokyo says to somebody from Hamburg, let's do a class. You come to Tokyo, let's teach Lam Rim, and then I'll come to Hamburg and I'll teach there. And make some kind of cool collaborations about teaching. Okay, everybody can teach this. You can teach it in yoga studios, you know. It's a pleasant subject to teach people. How do you meditate? How do you prepare for meditation properly? Everybody wants to, everybody in a yoga school wants to know. And this is the authentic transmission of it. So please pass it on. Don't be shy. Okay? Invite yourself to a yoga studio. You know? Say, usually they close at 8 o'clock. People do a 5:30 class. Usually the yoga studios are free after 8 o'clock. And say, look, I'll come from 8 to 9. I'll do a free class. Or you can charge and I don't get any money. Which is my usual custom. And then start like that. Okay, start in a yoga. Teach this in a, teach the 8-point posture. Okay, all right. Mazal. Okay, all right. We'll do a final prayer. Dorothy, you ready? Okay, thank you. Yeah, see you in August. Okay? I had my pleasure. Oh, look. Oh, yeah, thank you. Okay, thank you.